Welcome to the Biola Hour. I'm your host, Mike Ahn. Biola is a faith-based liberal arts university in Southern California, and the Biola Hour is where we have biblically grounded conversations on culturally relevant issues with a host of guests who help us see what our faith looks like on the ground. This week's guest is Dr. Nancy Yoon, who is the chair of Biola's sociology department and the author of the book, Real Inequality. She is a sociologist of film, and she studies how Hollywood's representation of people of color shapes the way we conceptualize each other. This interview is taped live at a Biola chapel. The first segment is my interview with Nancy. The second segment is where we field questions from our live student audience. I loved hearing Nancy's passion to better represent images of marginalized groups so that more complete stories of these marginalized groups can be heard. So Nancy, what was some of the things that you wanted to bring out in the book, and why was that so important for you as a sociologist, but also a Christian sociologist, to make sure that we can hear in the wider audience?
Hi everyone, so glad to see you here on a Friday rainy morning. So when I wrote this book, I started the research in 2000. So I was always interested in representation, right? I grew up in Long Beach. Anyone here from the LBC?
Woo! There you go.
So I immigrated here actually when I was 5 to Long Beach, and I grew up a latchkey kid. Mike and I were talking about we were both latchkey kids.
That's right.
And so the television was my babysitter and my socializer, right? So I came to this country, I didn't speak any English, I watched TV. I actually remember Mr. Rogers. Is that like way too old for you guys?
There's something called Daniel Tiger now. Daniel Tiger is like a cartoon version of Mr. Rogers.
Yes, I actually know that one. It's not the same, not the same. So I used to, my grandmother and I, we used to call him the guy who put on his sweater and took and like would change his shoes because we didn't know Mr. Rogers, but and Sesame Street. So I learned English and Spanish like at the same time, and so it was a big socializer, right? So what I noticed as I was getting older was that there was this kind of discrepancy between kind of Long Beach where I grew up, where there were refugee kids, there were African Americans, Latinos, Latinas, and then television was completely white, right?
I never
saw myself represented. And I think as I grew older, I just became really interested in representation. I think that as a Christian, we're made in God's image, but then Hollywood only represents some populations of us and not others. And that makes a big difference because it's about significance, right? Who is worthy of a story to be told?
Right.
And when that story is missing on screen, it affects the way that we see ourselves and that we see one another. And that, as a Christian, that's concerning to me because then we're not really seeing the full breadth of God's creation.
Great. It seems to me that Hollywood portrays itself to be progressive and to be liberal in some sense. To be all for diversity. What does your research show about this, and how might that not be the case?
So Hollywood, as a sociologist, we look at things not at the individual level, but at what's called the institutional level, and Hollywood is a big institution, right?
Yeah.
And societal level as well. And the funny thing about racism and sexism and inequality is that it's everywhere, right? So
right.
Hollywood might think of itself and kind of package itself or market itself as this very inclusive environment. But as we know, as some of you guys may know, Oscar So White was the last 2 years. This year, actually, there are actors of color nominated. And that shows that Hollywood is, in fact, part of the system, right? And people have biases, people who on the left and the right? We're all born into a society that is sinful in terms of not being able to, be equal to everybody in terms of the way that we're raised. We don't even think of each other, I think, equally. But this is all, I think, back then it used to be okay to think that way openly, pre-civil rights. And now I think we don't recognize that we all harbor those biases still, right? Even if we think of ourselves not as racist, in fact, partly because of Hollywood and just our family of origin, the way we're socialized, all that still contributes to us not being able to see each other completely equally. In fact, we have stereotypes, right? We have stereotypes of people. And sometimes we don't even recognize them. Like I, who, you know, I've written this book, I've you know, studied this, I've gotten a PhD, and I was watching this show called Queen Sugar, which is a show on the Oprah's network. Okay. It's by Ava DuVernay, and there was a scene in the show where I was watching, and I knew that the show was about an African American family, right? But there's a scene where you have an African American custodian who's polishing the floor, and then a white male who is in a business suit with a briefcase walking towards the camera. Right, so you see the custodian, you see the guy walking, and he actually walks past the camera.
Right.
Right, keeps going. And then the camera focuses on the African-American custodian who's polishing the floor. And I was shocked because I was expecting the story to be about that other guy because you're so used to it. It's just not race and gender, but it's class as well, right? We're used to stories about wealthy, powerful people. Think about, like, the Wolves of Wall Street and things like that. There's very few stories about the marginalized in Hollywood, right? Those kind of stories are less told. So I recognize that I had that biases. I had that bias, even though I've critically examined media, because those biases are so ingrained, and we can't help ourselves but see everybody through those lenses.
Yeah, you know what is so wrong about underrepresentation? You know, why can't we just think, you know what? I might not be on the screen, but you know, I can live out my own life. And what does that do when I don't see myself on the screen as much, or people like me?
Yeah, so research shows, so psychological studies show that young people, and we know that young people are consuming media at enormous rates, right? People kind of use the television as babysitters, as, you know, latchkey kids know.
Right.
And so they actually showed that there was a study of white boys and girls and black boys and girls, and they looked at self-esteem and number of hours of television consumed. And with every increased number of hours, the white girl, the black boy, and the black girl, all their self-esteems went down for every additional hour of television consumed. So these are things that maybe we can think that, oh yeah, well, I see other people in my life that are doing good things. Like, you know, I see, if I were like Latina, there's like, you know, there's Sotomayor, who's like, you know, the Supreme Court justice. I can aspire to that. But if I'm not seeing anybody on a day-to-day basis, especially as a child, just even knowing that one single person, that's not enough to kind of make me feel like confident, right? There's actually a study that just came out, if anybody read it, that girls as young as age 6 already associate their genders not with brilliance. Huh. So as young as age 5, they're still like, yeah, girls rule. Yeah. But by age 6, they're already like, oh, you know, yeah, girls are not as brilliant as boys.
My daughter's 6. You just broke my heart.
So that study literally just came out this past week. So media has a lot to do with that, right? And that's why it's important. And also the other thing is that, so not just self-esteem of you know, not seeing oneself represented, but also how you see other people, right? So research also shows that when you have no contact with a certain group, which is actually a lot of us, America is still very segregated in terms of social circles, and so then you kind of use television and film to draw conclusions about people, even if it's not conscious, right? But when think about it, there was a radio show that UCR professor described this phenomenon really well. He said that if you've never seen an airplane in real life and all you watch is the news, all you see are crashes. Right? So you think that all airplanes do are crash. You never see airplanes landing or taking off safely. You only in the news only, you know, shows you the crashes. So that's all you, so then you associate that with airplanes, right?
Right.
So the same thing happens when you know, if you're only seeing like Asian Americans as nerds or African Americans as criminals or Latinos as, you know, illegal, you know, aliens. Then that impacts the way that we see things. All of us, even those of us who maybe have some contact with those groups, it still influences us, especially since research also shows that we're consuming like 15 and a half hours of media per day. I mean, that is...
Whoa, I'm sleeping too then, huh?
Well, if you combine like social media and, you know, watching film and television, which it's all kind of like... Right, it all melts together now, right? Because everything is kind of on the phone or on a small screen. So we're consuming so much media, and all that impacts the way that we see the world.
Yeah. So it's like we absorb these images and we kind of like think that becomes our reality in some sense. Is that fair to say?
Well, we don't even consciously know it. It just becomes our reality, right? It becomes the way that we perceive people, especially, again, if we don't know anyone in real life or we just have minimal contact, right? Even if I just have one good friend, one, you know, if I have one, if I'm like, if I have one Latina friend, right? And I think, okay, I know everything there is to know about Latinas, right? But, you know, the in fact, one friend does not make me, you know, therefore very conscious about the different experiences because, you know, as we know, we are, God's created us in all this, all these diversity, and just in you and I, probably, even though we both look similar as Asians, I would imagine that we have different ideas and different experiences.
Absolutely.
I mean, we don't even speak the same language of origin, right? You're Korean American?
Yeah, Korean,
so,
yeah.
So, you know, Asians don't speak the same language, right? So,
or, surprise.
I mean, English. but I think the idea that Asia, you know, Asian American, like, there are so many different languages and yeah. cultures. And in fact, in our countries of origin, we all hate each other, right? So coming here to be kind of all lumped into one group, it's very odd, right? And Hollywood certainly does not distinguish between groups. There was one actor I interviewed. He's Chinese American, and he was asked to do a Japanese American. He was auditioning for a Japanese mafia role, so they asked him to do a Japanese accent. So he was like thinking, okay, who is like this classic Japanese actor? Oh, Toshio Mifune, who's in like the classic Japanese, like what does he sound like when he speaks English? So he brought that authenticity, and then the casting director, who is a white Jewish woman, who was like, no, that's not the Japanese accent I'm looking for. So then he thought, okay, what is she looking for? Probably a stereotype, you know, accent. So then he does the stereotype, you know, kind of more like, I mean, it's not even Chinese, but I think it's typically thought of as.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and he did that, and she's like, that's the Japanese accent I was looking for, right? So what, it's funny, because even actors of color have to, what they're portraying on screen are a stereotype version of what we're used to. And that Asian accent actually came out of, the origins of that Asian accent came out of the old like images of white actors in yellow face, right? That's where those accents actually came from. Some white actor making up what they thought an Asian should sound like, and that's the accent that now Asian Americans or Asian actors have to conform to, right? In order to get roles. So that's the level of unreal portrayals that are on TV and film.
Wow. Okay. Thank you for sharing some of your wisdom. Okay, we're going to answer a few questions from our audience today.
Awesome.
Here we go. I want to be more critical about what I watch, but I am new to the conversation. What are some stereotypes of people groups that we can watch out for and be aware of? And then how to fight against stereotyping in real life?
That's a really great
question. What a great question.
Well, I do teach a film and television class, and we go through all the stereotypes of people groups, actually, in detail. So let me think if I could just give like a...
Can you highlight a few of them?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll start with the Asians, right? So so I don't offend anybody immediately. So these are stereotypes, right? Because I actually posted something on Facebook about our students like mapping out the different stereotypes, and I had people be offended that I called out the stereotypes because they think that I'm stereotyping. You know, just seeing them is harsh. So so I think Asian Americans and Latinos and also Arab / Middle Easterners all get the foreigner stereotype, right? So obviously, the thing about accents, though, I am speaking with an accent. I think it's probably a Valley Girl, Southern Californian accent. We are all accented peoples, right?
So, especially in California.
Yes. Well, it's hard because California, I think sometimes we export our accents. You kind of, like on the news, it sounds kind of like California. So we think that that's standard. It's like in England, it's like Her Majesty's English or something, right? So, but we are all accented. But then we tend, and then so not only are they accented, So my example of the authentic accent is actually not the accent that people are looking for in Hollywood in terms of casting. They're looking for a stereotype accent. And what is that stereotype accent? It's to demean, right? It's to laugh at, right? Years ago, I invited, there was a CMA chapel, a film department chapel, and I invited a friend who is Japanese American, and he was talking about his experiences and how he And he said that he actually did a great John Wayne impersonation. So he did a like a country western accent, and you know everybody in the audience were quiet. And then he was talking about how he was expected to do like maybe you know a few minutes later that he was expected to do an Asian accent, and he actually did it. And then everyone laughed. But he was actually giving an example of how problematic it was, but then people laughed at him doing the Asian accent. And at the end of the chapel, everyone's like, okay, what are some closing thoughts? And I was like fuming inside. I was like, so the last word that I had was like, you guys need to examine what you find funny, because that wasn't funny, you know? Or why do you find that funny? Like the fact, so recognizing, okay, what are the stereotypes that, what are the things that I expect of each group when I'm watching? And do I find things that are funny that really aren't funny, right?
Right.
And broken English, someone speaking broken English, someone is trying to learn the language, right? And to laugh at someone speaking broken English, I mean, that's not nice, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But that's how Hollywood kind of, it sticks in the foreigner as the stand-in for comic relief.
Yeah.
But we're laughing at someone, you know, who's just coming to, I mean, it's not even, it's a stereotype, but behind it is the idea that somebody who is struggling and coming, you know, trying to assimilate into this country is funny.
Well, can I ask a question off of that? Yeah. What about shows like Fresh Off the Boat, you know? I mean, it's a show about immigrants, and the parents definitely have some sort of accent. Is that a bad representation? Is that an underrepresentation? Like, what do you think about a show like Fresh Off the Boat?
Yeah, so I think a show like Fresh Off the Boat, when there are more than one representation of a group, you can have maybe someone who is accented, but then when you have someone who is not accented, then our brains are able to process that, oh, not all Asians have accents, right?
Got it.
And even Randall Park, who plays the father, I've heard that he's lost the accent this season.
Oh, really?
So he's assimilated really quick, you know? But I think the actor himself, he's Korean-American playing a Taiwanese American first-generation immigrant. He had to have accent coach, right? Actually, all of them had to have accent coaches, which is ironic. But they're trying to do authentic accents, and I think he just gave it up because, you know, so then, voila, he's assimilated. But the idea is that when you have more than one, when we have a whole cast of Asian Americans, you see the grandmother who is, you know, who can't speak English, right? And then you have the mom who speaks with an accent. You have the kid who speaks, I mean, he's trying to be like, you know, like hip and urban. And then you have like the nerdy little kids who also speak with no accents. So you have a variety. So some of it does reinforce stereotypes, and I think we're not there yet for Asian Americans, unfortunately. But at least there are characters in there that are full. There's a full breadth of representation, and you also empathize with them. They're protagonists, right? It's the worst when they're the stereotype and they just walk in, walk off, and you never see them again. Versus someone who's a protagonist and you follow the series, you identify with that character. So then you actually, when you identify with that character, you are stepping into their shoes. You are having empathy, and you think like, oh, I understand that group a little bit better. You know.
Great. All right, let's go to the next question. Okay, this is from Samantha. She asks, how do you respond to the often unjustified point that white actors are the quote-unquote most qualified and talented over minorities?
Yeah, no, that's a common. Actually, the more common is that we couldn't find enough talented. We couldn't find, you know, actors of color who are ready, right? They don't usually say whites are more qualified in Hollywood because that does sound a little more racist. But it's the same thing where they say like, oh, we couldn't find them, you know. So I was interviewing a talent agent, and she was like, yeah, we have the hardest time again using Asians, but you know, this could apply to any underrepresented group, any group of color. They were like, oh, we can't find Asians. We just can't find them. And I was like, oh, did you look at East West Players, which is the premier Asian American theater group in LA? She's like, what's that? So she didn't even know what East West Players are. So they're not looking very hard, right?
And when
there aren't enough roles written for actors of color, so actors of color are not actually performing enough roles. So then people don't know them, right? People will know, they can think of actors off the top of their heads because some actors work more than others, right? So it's a numbers game, right?
Yeah.
But it's a numbers game that then they transfer into talent, right? Oh, there's not enough, but they don't know, they're not looking hard enough. This is a problem with diversity in all kind of occupations where people are, you know, people that there's people who have a lot of social networks, right? So they're in there and they know it and they know how to get in there. But the people who haven't been let in, they're not part of those social networks. So you have to really, you know, you have to go out of your way to find them. Doesn't mean that they don't exist, but it's because there's been barriers. So right. If there have been barriers, how are they supposed to jump the barrier and get known, right? If you're not actually lifting the barrier and you're not going around the barrier to look for them.
Right. Yeah. Great. Let's answer another one. What will correct representation in media look like? What measurement can accurately tell us when we've gotten there, and what institutional changes are necessary to make it happen?
That's a tough question.
That's a really good one.
Okay, so correct representation. Well, when I wrote my book, so as an academic, when I published my book, I had to have other academics read it and say, okay, it's good to go, you can publish it. I had three rounds of this, and one round, there was a film theater professor who said, because I was saying, okay, if we just get like the number of people on screen match the number in population. Like, okay. Then we're good to go. And she's like, no, because what if they're all stereotypes?
Got
right?
It.
So like a show like Empire, right? Empire is hugely popular, and I think it's so important to have lots of representations. But when, you know, everybody on that show is like, you know, falls into stereotypes, so you can say this about Fresh Off the Boat and Blackish and all these other shows too. Then we're not there yet, right? But then you have shows like Insecure, and you have shows like Queen Sugar. You have shows that are more drama. And I think it's the sitcoms, right? The sitcoms or the kind of like melodramas that those genres themselves are exaggerated, right? They're one-dimensional, and so the likelihood of those stereotypes are reinforcing stereotypes. So it's like, when people of color are actually in all the different genres, just like whites, right? So it's like it's equal opportunity representation. Then you're able to kind of get past the, oh, well, they're like this kind of mentality. So I think that that's when we're, and that we're not having these conversations about, oh, you know, we need more diversity in this area where Hollywood would stop saying, oh, well, that's a black movie. Only black people are going to go see that. You know, because that is a mentality.
Got it.
There's Master of None, which is a show on Netflix, talks about when there's more than one Indian on TV, that's like an ethnic film, that's foreign, right? Because you can't see more than one, you know, South Asian on TV, because that's not American anymore, which goes back to the whole foreigner problem, right? So where we see everybody as, oh, it's just a matter of fact. And they're not necessarily all the same, that they bring their cultural uniqueness, and that's just television, or that's just film.
Great. Is it fair to say then, like, underrepresentation in some sense limits the way that we want to approach other people's stories, and we don't even want to listen to their story in some sense. And better representation in some sense will help us be more open to understanding a wider perspective that we might not have even thought of.
I think that as you were just talking, I realized sometimes people don't want to tell their stories because people have stereotypes about them. Like if, for example, if someone asks me, oh, so tell me, you know, where were you born? Where are you from? Like, immediately I'm thinking, they think I am a foreigner. I don't want to even go there. I don't want to open up because I don't want to open myself up to being stereotyped, right? So that also prevents conversation. Maybe I do want to tell a story, but only knowing that the person I'm telling is not going to, you know, think of me just as that, you know, that film portrayal of a foreign Asian, right?
Right. So
I think it's not just that openness to story, because I think that there is openness to story, but whether people want to tell it, because there's just so much, what's called, like, just microaggressions that feels like that comes from, I think, the Hollywood representations of us as stereotypes. So
great. Thanks, Nancy. Here's another question for us. What are practical ways to rectify these issues? Do white audiences prefer majority culture movies? If so, are there ways to financially incentivize making these decisions that will hurt the bottom line?
I think that that's a myth, that white audiences only prefer majority culture movies. If you look at Rogue One, anyone see Rogue One, Star Wars story? So that was, I think, not a majority culture movie. You see all the rebels were like basically besides Felicity Jones, 100% people of color. And that movie was the top box office hit of 2016. So I think that, and actually statistics show that Fresh Off the Boat have, I think, a very high white audience. So, because if it was only Asian audiences were tuning in, that show probably, you know, wouldn't float. So I think that's
funny.
Oh, did I? That was totally unintended. I just think poetically. Anyway, or corn, very corny. Anyway, so, but I think that now I'm like totally distracted. Because I didn't mean that to be a joke, right? Okay, so you guys are laughing at me, not with me. No.
It's with, I promise.
But anyway, so yeah, so I think that's a myth. That's a total myth, right? That, I mean, I would imagine that, who's seen Master of None here? Like, that's a really funny show, right?
Yeah, it is.
And I think that there are, and you know, Orange is the New Black, that there's all these shows that, actually Orange is the New Black was the biggest hit in Netflix, right? It's like all women, you know, and majority of them were people of color, and that was their biggest hit. I mean, they don't really release numbers because they're kind of secretive like that. But one time they said that, you know, that the most whatever clicked, you know, because they actually know, right? They know when you are watching something, which is kind of creepy. But Netflix, like they said that Orange is the New Black was their biggest show over House of Cards, right? Mm-hmm. So you would think that, like, if it was about majority culture, it should be the Kevin Spacey thing, right? And that show's not very diverse versus Orange is the New Black. So I think that's a myth. And you look at Hidden Figures. Anyone see Hidden Figures? Like, that was a really great film. And that actually, in the two opening weekends, it actually beat out Rogue One those two weekends.
Okay.
So you have Rogue One, which is already diverse. And then you have Hidden Figures, which is about three black women, you know?
Yeah.
And I was at a Girl Scout event that was a screening of Hidden Figures.
Oh,
so
cool.
I took my girls. We were at a Girl Scout event. And the audience, most of the audience was, it was kind of an expensive event. And most of the audience were white Girl Scouts. And we were like, we clapped at least like 5 times throughout the film because we identified, right? The girls identify with that. So I don't think that majority culture thing is actually holds water.
No. That was a good one. Okay. Well, let's go to the next one. Is that okay?
Yes.
Here we go. From what Dr. Yoon has said, I think I can understand how the media can poison people's view of the world. But how would you say we as Christians should experience and consume the media, if at all?
That's a good one. That's a good one. I think that I don't think that Christians should abstain from media,
mm-hmm.
but I think that that we should. I mean, as a person who studies pop culture, I like to know kind of what the world is that we live in. Not necessarily to be influenced in a you know negative way, but I think that's why we need to bring our critical lens, right? So the critical lens as Christians, not just including like, oh, you know, they're cursing or you know things like that, but
right.
critical lens in how are God's people being represented,
yeah.
right? How can that impact the way I interact with people?
Yeah.
So what I'm talking about sounds like, oh, race, gender stuff, but that's Christian stuff. That is living as people who are reaching out to our neighbors, right? We're called to love our neighbors. We're called to understand our neighbors, you know, not necessarily become them, right, if it's a matter of, you know, belief, but I think that we need to understand that the kind of culture that they're living in and the struggles that people have. Not that media is the only way to do that. And certainly we should be doing that in real life.
Right.
But I think that the media does, it captures, you know, a zeitgeist of our country. And I think that it's important to read it critically, but to still engage.
Great. Here's one more question for us. What would be a good action step to create more equality in the Hollywood industry, especially for us as college students?
Okay, so I think that in the last chapter of my book, I give examples and as well as I list advocacy organizations that you can actually join that actually do organize things in terms of boycotts, protests, but also you guys should support projects that you think are, you know, are good representations of our multicultural society. So you should go the first two, if not the opening weekend, the second opening weekend, because Hollywood actually looks at those numbers. And if those numbers, that's why, you know, the whole like, all over social media was like, Hidden Figures beats out Rogue One, you know? And they were blasting that because they want Hollywood to know, hey, there's a market for this film. Make more films like this, right? So I was actually, that Girl Scout event was the second week. So my family and I, we were part of those numbers, right?
Yeah.
So that's something that's really easy to do, right, in terms of supporting. But you could also protest. You could boycott. You could picket if you want. That happened actually recently with another film that I know of that actually then took. It didn't do very well because of the picketing. But I think that also social media, if you guys are on social media, on Twitter, if you even have a problem with like a television show, like a representation, there was How I Met Your Mother. They had an episode where they dressed up like as Chinese people, like really badly, and there was a hashtag How I Met Your Racism, so that was out, and it got an apology from the producer and directors. Yeah, so so I don't know. I mean the show ended, but the idea is that you want them to know, you know, and they're watching Twitter, they're watching social media, they're actually very concerned. They think that they're not sure about social media, but social media can destroy a film actually if it's bad enough. So those are ways that you can do that.
Great. Nancy, you know, we ask one last question to all of our guests, and that is, what are some of the biblical principles that help shape some of your ideas today?
So I knew this question beforehand, and I was telling Mike that this is the hardest question for me, because for me, that everything that I do, I feel like is biblically grounded, is grounded in my faith. And oftentimes I'm asked these questions and I think like I have to justify social justice as something biblical or as something Christian, or standing up for the marginalized. Like I wrote this article on 10 actors of color that I think can defy, you know, actors so Oscar so white that they can get nominated. And actually they did get nominated. So this is before the Oscar nominations came out. But it was posted to the Biola website, and I was accused of being a race baiter. And I was like, race baiter? You know, it's the idea that because I'm talking about race, I'm creating racism. And in my mind, that's kind of like accusing a firefighter of being an arsonist, right? So the fire is there,
right?
Am I going to put it out? Am I going to call it out and put it out? Or are you going to say, like, there's no fire? You're making the fire exist by calling it out.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's how I feel about racism, you know, because as a social scientist, it's not just like I'm whining or I'm listening to people who are whining, but there's statistics. Like, social science it's a science, right? We use demographic information. We use statistics to show that there is inequality controlling for everything else, right? It's not a matter of, oh, if someone's just lazy, they just work harder. It isn't about that. It really is. Inequality exists. It is an absolute fact, right? And so for people to see that as somehow politicized, which is just strange to me, right? This is a faith issue. This is a Christian compassion issue.
Yeah.
And so I feel like in Jesus, you know, it's modeling after, I like to say that, you know, what would Jesus do? But I think what would Jesus do when I was growing up as a middle school Christian, that was about like, don't do these things, right? But as an adult, I think like, what would Jesus do? Well, Jesus's ministry was with the marginalized, right? He reached out to the people that nobody wanted to touch, right? The untouchables. And I feel like that's my calling, and that's why sociology was just such a great fit for me. And so, yeah, you're like giving me that.
Oh yeah,
time to wrap
this
it
the,
up.
The music at the end of the Oscar speech. I kind of. So. Well,
but
thank
anyway,
you, Nancy.
Yeah, thank you.
So thank you for being here. Appreciate your time. Everyone, let's give Nancy a hand one more time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you like what you heard, subscribe and rate us on iTunes and connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram to continue the conversation. Also, check out our website at biola.edu/the-biola-hour. Be sure to catch our follow-up podcast, The B-Side, where the Biola Campus Ministry team reflect on what we learned in this conversation with Nancy.